All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're going to be talking about whether Antonio Brown's new deal with the Oakland Raiders is going to either help or hurt the Falcons when they approach Julio Jones about his new contract.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalFans.com, on Twitter at FalFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today, we're talking about Julio Jones's contract situation. We'll talk about that in the context of the news that you may not have heard on Sunday or early Sunday morning, where the Steelers agreed to trade Antonio Brown to the Oakland Raiders in exchange for a third and fifth round draft pick. And as part of that situation, Oakland agreed to give Antonio Brown a slight bump in pay, paying him basically 3 years, $50 million over the next 3 years. He was already owed about $38 million, $39 million. So they gave him a small bump of about $11.2 million. When you add that on to the four-year, $68 million contract extension that Antonio Brown signed with the Steelers originally in 2017, you know, you get a figure of 4 years, $79.2 million, which is where you're hearing the sort of figure where you see Antonio Brown is averaging $19.8 million. And so that now some people sort of see it as, oh, now receivers like a Julio Jones, perhaps, can now ask for $20 million a year, which we'll have to sort of see. But again, I think the more important part of that contract is that Antonio Brown is getting $50.1 million over the next 3 years. Has another $4 million available via incentives that would push that to about $54 million. And $30 million of that $50.1 million is guaranteed. Originally, Brown's 2017 deal with the Steelers had about $19 million in guaranteed money, and that was entirely in the form of a signing bonus. I don't think it's a coincidence that a year after the guaranteed money sort of fizzled out, Antonio Brown's quote-unquote issue started to resurface again. And he started to be very loud about sort of his unhappiness and unwillingness to play in Pittsburgh. And I think a lot of that had to do with him wanting to get more guaranteed money, which he got from the Oakland Raiders. So the question is, how does this affect Julio Jones? Well, I think similar to the Antonio Brown situation, I think Julio Jones's contract situation is really all about the guaranteed money. We never heard anything about Julio Jones being unhappy with his contract until last year, when the guaranteed portion of his contract ran out. And so I don't necessarily buy into the thought process that you see from many folks out there that seem to be of the idea that Julio Jones is going to get this brand new five-year extension or something like that, that's going to reset the wide receiver market and exceed sort of what Odell Beckham got and what Antonio Brown has now gotten. I think really this is all about Julio Jones angling for more guaranteed money at the end of this current contract. And, you know, I think those guarantees could and should wind up putting him at or near the top of the market again. But I do think what this Antonio Brown deal does is it gives us a floor for sort of where Julio Jones' contract could be, which is that $30 million floor. So I don't necessarily buy completely into the idea that, you know, it's, you know, Antonio Brown getting this money has now raised the price for Julio Jones. It actually could wind up lowering the price somewhat to a certain extent, which we'll discuss later on in the episode. But when you look at Julio Jones's current contract, he's got two more years left on his deal, 2019 and 2020. He is owed $21 million in cash over those 2 years, $9.6 million in base salary this year, $11.4 million base salary next year. You look at his total cap hit over those 2 years, it's $26 million, because a little bit more than $26 million, because $5.3 million the Falcons also owe him in terms of their prorated bonuses from the previous extension. And so obviously that number is going to go up from the very least, and we'll sort of see if the Falcons add a third year to that, which I think is very extremely likely in 2021, which will then push him over that $30 million guaranteed mark. You know, to me, the big question for me, at least, and we'll get into this later, is sort of how many dummy years, air quotes, dummy years that they'll add on to the end of the contract, which is basically for the full purpose of spreading out money as opposed to the idea that he's going to actually play out that contract. So even if Julio Jones does sign like a 4-year extension or whatever, I think in reality, it's really a 1-year extension. And those other 3 years are just quote unquote dummy years that the Falcons don't necessarily have any intention of keeping him for. And, you know, that's part of the thing where you see these big contracts that teams sign to free agents throughout this portion of every year, where you see these 4-, 5-, and 6-year contracts. But for the vast majority of free agents that sign these deals, they only last like 2 or 3 years before the team moves on from them. And I think that's kind of the key with the Julio Jones situation, where I don't think this is a situation where a guy normally in free agency, where you have a 26, 27-year-old guy signing these long-term contracts with the idea that, you know, when that guy turns 29 or 30, you know, the team might have the ability to restructure. I think the situation with Julio Jones is that him facing a 2-to-3-year deal, these next 2 to 3 years might be the final years for Julio Jones in Atlanta. And so I think the Falcons are going to try to structure their contract to potentially be able to move on from Julio Jones 2 to 3 years from now. And we'll sort of get into why I think that and how they could do that coming up in just a moment. But guys, you know, this is going to be a very busy week around the NFL. And of course, you guys want to check out the Locked On NFL podcast with host Matt Williamson, who's going to have all your bases covered as free agency hits this week. And we see so much rapid movement around the league. Find the Locked On NFL podcast on whatever podcast platform you check out your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So, you know, part of the reason why I'm not convinced that Julio Jones is going to have quite the longevity here in Atlanta is, you know, you look at some of these wide receiver numbers in the past and, you know, just looking at like 3 separate benchmarks for wide receivers, 1,000 yards, 1,200 yards, and 1,500 yards. And you look at them from age 29 to 34. And since, you know, going back to 1970 in the NFL merger, looking at 1,000-yard receiver seasons, there have been 72 receivers at the age of 29 that had 1,000 yards. There have been 50 receivers at the age of 30 that had 1,000 yards, 39 at the age of 31, 31 receivers at the age of 32, 17 at the age of 33, and 20 at the age of 34. You go to 1,200-yard seasons, there's been 30 guys that had 1,200-yard seasons at age 29, 17 at age 30, 16 at age 31, 12 at age 32, 3 at age 33, and 7 at age 34. You go to 1,500 yards, 7 guys at age 29 have had 1,500-yard seasons, 4 at age 30, 3 at age 31, 0 at age 32, 1 at age 33, and 0 at age 34. And so when you look at these numbers, when you look at the higher threshold, the 1,500 yards, there is a clear drop-off from age 31 to 32, where you had 3 guys with 1,500-yard season at age 31 and 0 at age 32. The lower you go in that threshold, that drop-off seems to be around age 32 to age 33, where there's a similar number for 1,000-yard seasons at age 32 as there were at age 31, but a significantly lower number at age 33, and the same goes for 1,200-yard seasons. So to me, that's sort of the interesting drop-off where the high end, you know, you look at Julio Jones, who had almost 1,700 yards this past season at age 29, those numbers seem to suggest then that Julio Jones is only going to have maybe 2 more years like this of what we saw in 2018, where he has these sort of 1,500-plus yard seasons. And prior to, you know, this past season, he had like 2 1,400-plus yard seasons. So that sort of age 31 season, where sort of the last year of Julio Jones's high-end production at this current rate would be the 2020 season, so the year after next of this upcoming season. And so that's part of the reason why you've heard me say a number of times over the last year or so that I don't think you can really expect more than maybe 2 peak seasons of Julio Jones production. Now, could you get more than 2 Julio Jones having 1,000-yard seasons? Absolutely. And these numbers seem to suggest that there's a realistic chance that Julio Jones could have 1,000-yard seasons up until he's age 34 or 35 or maybe even older than that if he's continuing to play that long. But the question is going to be, like, Are you going to want to pay a premium for a 1,000-yard Julio Jones, particularly when you're looking across the field and you see a Calvin Ridley who, at that point in time, when you're expecting 1,000-yard seasons from Julio Jones, maybe you're now expecting, you know, 1,200 and 1,500-yard seasons from Calvin Ridley. And so when you go back and you look at sort of the Falcons, how they've treated their first-round picks since the new collective bargaining agreement was signed in 2011, they have basically given all five of their first-round picks fifth-year options. You saw that with Julio. You saw that with Trufant, Jake Matthews, Vic Beasley, and presumably at some point in the next 60 days, you'll also see that with Keanu Neal. They've already publicly said that. I believe they've already publicly said that they intend on giving him a fifth-year, extending that fifth-year option. What's interesting is all but one of those people, Vic Beasley being the one exception, all of those guys got new contracts from the Falcons. And we'll I guess we'll technically see whether or not Vic Beasley does, and obviously we'll see what happens with Keanu Neal. But so far, with Julio, with Trufant, and with Jake, they all got contract extensions after their fourth seasons. And that, you know, that was Julio in the summer of 2015, Trufant in the spring of 2017, Jake in this past summer in 2018. It looks like Vic Beasley will break that pattern, but then next summer you'll potentially have Keanu Neal getting a contract extension, assuming, of course, that he has a rebound season in this 2019 season. And obviously that trend should continue with Tack and getting an extension in the summer of 2021 and Calvin Ridley in the summer of 2022. So that offseason of 2022 is where you think Calvin Ridley is going to get paid. And that also is going to be the season, that upcoming season, 2022, is going to be the year where Julio Jones is age 33. And as I pointed out earlier, age 33 is really the age where you can't really expect a receiver, even of Julio Jones caliber, to have sort of peak production. And so you wonder, okay, if Julio Jones is on the decline, then Ridley's on the ascension over the next 2 to 3 years. How much is Ridley going to get paid that summer? And, you know, we don't know right now because there's a new CBA coming up and that's going to have a dramatic impact on things. But let's just use inflation to make a rough prediction. And when I say inflation, just looking at sort of the overall salary cap and just assuming that, you know, a certain amount of money, the salary cap has gone up, you know, about, on average, I think like 7% each year, but this past year it only went up about 6.2%. So let's just assume a 6% increase with the idea that sort of a dollar in 2019 under the current salary cap is worth $1.06 in 2020 and $1.12 in 2021 and so on and so forth. So in 2022, an $18 million a year contract, which is the most right now for any wide receiver with Odell Beckham, making that amount of money would be worth a little bit more than $21 million. So again, you look at Calvin Ridley's potential contract when his deal is up, there's a good probability, a good possibility that he's going to be making more than $20 million a year. And so that really begs the question, are you going to pay Calvin Ridley his market value and still also want to be paying Julio Jones what he is, his max value is at that point in time, if he's been on the steady decline for at least a year or so up to that point? And I think the answer is probably no. And so I think that's going to also be a factor in this negotiation. It will get into exactly why that is in just a moment. But in addition to the Locked On NFL podcast, you want to get all your offseason takes, what's going to happen this week in free agency and how it affects each and every team's draft plans by checking out the two podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network devoted to the NFL draft. They are, of course, the Locked On NFL Draft podcast with host John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. They are also the Draft Dudes podcast with Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs hosting that thing. Find out wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. You know, what's interesting is we kind of saw a similar situation with Roddy White when he got into his 30s and we saw a little bit of a decline from him. And I wonder if we're going to see a similar situation with Julio Jones. You know, in 2011, in Roddy White's age 30 season, he had a very inconsistent season. I think he led the NFL in drops that year. Still was productive, but wasn't nearly as productive as people thought he would be. He bounced back with a great season in 2012 at the age of 31. And while he was technically the number one receiver in terms of his production, I think when you looked at how teams treated him, at least defensive coordinators and how they game plan against the Falcons, he was treated as the number two, with Julio Jones being the number one, drawing much more bracket coverage that year. Then at age 32, for Roddy White in the 2013 season, was plagued by injury. We saw him have a high ankle sprain to start that season. He tried to gut through that for the first couple of weeks, be a little bit of a decoy, but things got worse for him. He had a hamstring injury. And then basically we didn't really get to see Roddy White return to form until like week 13 that season because of that. Then in age 33 in 2014, he got a brand new contract prior to that season, but really struggled through the first half of that season, struggled to separate after having a off-season procedure on his knee. Then 2015 at age 34, he was really a shell of his former self. So we saw in the case of Roddy White that drop off from age 31 to 32, largely due to injuries. But after the age 32, his age 32 season in 2013 was again sort of the last year of Roddy White being what you could be considered on par with a number one wide receiver if you look at his performance down the stretch in that 2013 season at the age of 32. And so this is kind of the thing that I've been constantly talking about with Julio Jones and sort of questioning sort of his longevity. And I think you sort of saw a variation of that a little bit with Ryan Schrader this past season, where I think age does catch up to guys in the injury department. And we know, we've seen, you know, you look at Julio Jones and it's like, oh, well, he's only missed two games over the last 4 years. That whole injury-prone thing is not true, but it's like, over the last 4 years, Julio Jones has had a lot of nagging injuries. There's been a lot of weeks where he's not practicing on Wednesdays. There's not been a lot of weeks where he's not practicing on Thursdays. There's been a number of games over the last couple of seasons where he's been a quote-unquote game-time decision, where we didn't really know if he was going to be healthy enough to play. Well, for the most part, he has played, obviously, in those games. But, you know, these injuries that Julio Jones was able to gut through at age 28 and 29, I don't necessarily know if you're going to be realistically expecting him to gut through those same injuries at age 31 and 32. And, you know, you look at Roddy White prior to that 2013 season, he had missed zero games in his entire career due to injury prior to that season, and then missed, you know, he only technically missed three games, but in reality, he only really was healthy for like five of those games that he actually played in. And so, you know, what we saw thereafter, after that 2013 season for Roddy White, those injuries sort of accumulated and continue to take their toll. And we really just did not see an effective receiver after the end of that 2013 season. And a lot of that was due to the injuries taking a toll on him. And I think the issue the Falcons are going to have to face when they approach this Julio Jones situation is they're going to have to protect themselves down the road to not basically fall into that same trap where they're dealing with a Julio Jones that's missing, you know, I don't know how many games, five or six games a year at age 31, 32 or whatever. And they're paying him a whole bunch of money to basically, you know, miss a third of the season or a quarter of the season or, you know, potentially a half of the season due to some of these injuries catching up to him. And like, you know, it goes to me like, you know, one of the issues I always had with that 2013 year, because I think a lot of that was due to the fact that the Falcons neglected their wide receiver position. I think their 2013 season got tanked because the Falcons thought after Julio Jones got hurt going into that bye week that they thought Roddy White was going to come back. And between Roddy White and Harry Douglas and Drew Davis and Kevin Cohn and Darius Johnson, and then the addition of Brian Robiskie, they were going to be just fine at the wide receiver position and be just okay. But then again, Roddy White missed a lot of those games over the next 5 weeks. And the Falcons went 1-4 in those five games. And after a 1-5 start, their season was pretty much over at that point. So even with Roddy White coming back strong over the last 5 or 6 weeks of that 2013 season, it wasn't enough to sort of salvage their season. And I think a lot of that due to the domino effect of the Falcons neglecting their wide receiver position, particularly in the draft in the previous years leading into that 2013 season. You look at who the wide receivers the Falcons had drafted prior to that in 2007, you saw them draft Laurent Robinson, but then the Mike Smith regime got rid of him after a year, basically, of him being on the roster. They drafted Harry Douglas in 2008, which was a solid pick. You know, despite what you think about Harry Douglas, it was a solid third-round pick. In 2010, they drafted Kerry Meyer in the fifth round, a player that I happen to have an undrafted grade on, by the way. And then, of course, they gave up all those assets to move up to get Julio Jones in 2011. So in the six drafts prior, the Mike Smith, Dimitroff regime, in the sixth draft prior to that 2013 season, you know, the Falcons drafted three wide receivers. Now you look around the league, 189 wide receivers were drafted in that same 6-year span, which is on average 5.9 per team. So roughly 6 per team. And you did not, basically the Falcons drafted 3 less than the league average at that point. And, you know, obviously you're not expecting to hit on all 3 of those picks, but you think there's a pretty good chance that you would hit on at least one of those 3 wide receivers to think that that guy could have been a major contributor or at least been able to step up in the absence of Julio Jones and or Roddy White in that 2013 season. But instead, you got the Falcons continually looking sort of at their practice squad and looking primarily at special teams types of wide receivers with James Rogers and Kevin Cohn and Drew Davis to sort of fill their depth because they were pretty confident with, you know, their top 3 wide receivers, whether that was Roddy, Douglas, and then the combination of Julio / Michael Jenkins in those early years. I think, you know, I would like to see the Falcons learn their lesson from this. And it's, again, it's not to sit here and be like, oh, this is definitely going to happen and we're going to have a repeat of this in the future. But I think the point is to learn from your mistakes. And I think the Falcons were super confident that they didn't need to develop young wide receivers because they believed in sort of their quartet of Roddy, Julio, Gonzo, and Harry Douglas in the past. And I don't want to see the Falcons fall into the same trap thinking the same thing with Julio, Sanu, Ridley, and Hooper. And similar to that previous group I just mentioned, with Roddy and Gonzo being the elder statesmen of that group. And you know, by the time we got to 2013, it's not as if Harry Douglas was particularly young either. And you have a similar situation with Julio and Sanu moving forward being sort of, you know, towards the end of their career, not necessarily at the end, but towards the end of their career, being on the wrong side of 30. And so what makes that an issue, because you're potentially going to see the Falcons let Justin Hardy walk this offseason, one of the few draft picks that the Falcons have used on a wide receiver. You know, there's a possibility, I hope this is not the case, but, you know, until we find out otherwise, and maybe Monday or Tuesday, we should find out, but there's a possibility the Falcons could also let Marvin Hall walk as an exclusive rights free agent, similar to what they did with Sherrod Neesman. It doesn't make sense to me, but given it didn't make sense to let Sherrod Neesman walk last year, I wouldn't put it past the Falcons to do so. And so we'll have to sort of, you know, see how it plays out. But, you know, part of the reason why, you know, I have this anti-Sanu, it's not the only reason, but it contributes to it, my anti-Sanu rhetoric, is because, you know, this is a team that has notoriously not drafted and developed young wide receivers. And I think they basically wasted one of the few promising pieces that they actually have drafted in Justin Hardy by basically not developing him the last 3 years because they went out and spent all this money on Mohamed Sanu, who is, in my opinion, and I know this is not a popular opinion, I know I'm the minority thinking this opinion, but who is a slightly better version of Justin Hardy, but is getting paid a lot more, way more than what Justin Hardy is making. And so I guess, you know, not to sit here and paint this, you know, doom and gloom portrait, and you're like, what does any of this have to do with Julio Jones? Well, I guess for me, it's one of those things where I would hate to see the Falcons sort of make the same mistake because, as a lot of people out there seem to be under the impression, Julio Jones is going to play forever. And, you know, to me, the Falcons should be able to get another 2 to 3 great years out of Julio Jones. But in that 2 to 3 years, they need to start developing a contingency plan in the event that Julio Jones goes the route of Roddy White, in the event that Julio Jones, these nagging injuries that haven't been that big a deal over the last couple of years, start to be a much bigger deal over the next couple of years, and to have some young, talented wide receivers waiting in the wings to sort of step into the lineup and give Matt Ryan some viable options. Because I can't help but notice when you look at Matt Ryan's career, when he has 2 good outside receivers to throw to, whether that was in 2012 with Roddy and Julio, whether that's in 2016 with Julio and Gabriel, whether that's in 2018 with Julio and Ridley, he puts up MVP type of production. When he doesn't have that, you get a good quarterback still. He's still one of the better quarterbacks in the league, but not certainly the type of guy that you're really confident, oh, this guy, we can put our team on his back and he can carry us to the Super Bowl, which is obviously a thing, if you listen to the recent Q&A, that we've talked about a lot. So, you know, everybody's focused on the pass rush and everybody's focused on the D-line and the offensive line. But I think this wide receiver position, I won't say is just as critical, but is a critical component to if we're talking about this Falcon team competing for Super Bowls in the future. So all of that to say is just sort of broad strokes to me, the sort of the general health of the Falcons receiver position, getting it back to Julio Jones. And this is where we'll wrap things up here. How does this Antonio Brown contract affect Julio Jones? I think it's a good template for what we're going to see out of the Julio Jones situation. But as I've explained, I don't think the Falcons should be in the market to basically tear up Julio Jones' current deal and then basically give him this brand new long-term extension that they're going to, you know, 3 years from now, potentially regret giving him because of, you know, age, injury, and or the fact that they have a looming big contract for Calvin Ridley on the horizon. So I think really what this AB deal does is now we kind of know, okay, with Antonio Brown getting $50 million over the next 3 years, we kind of know what the ballpark is for what Julio Jones is going to get over the next 3 years. Odell Beckham previously was getting about $53 million over the 3 years of his contract. So we have a ballpark. You throw in, again, 4 years of on top of Antonio Brown's with incentives, it's about $54 million. So we kind of have an idea, okay, Julio Jones is going to get like, what, $50, $51 million, and then you can maybe throw in some incentives on top of that to push it to maybe 54 or 55 to sort of make him technically the highest paid guy if he hits all these incentives and whatnot. But I think in reality, when you look sort of at this contract, the question is going to be, it's all about the guaranteed money. And I think, you know, as I explained earlier at the top of the show, you already owe Julio Jones $21 million over the next 2 years. Basically, to get it to that 50, let's say $51 million figure to match what AB just got, that basically means you owe him another $30 million. And as I've said, I think, you know, you add on another year to that contract, the 2021 year, and that $30 million could be pretty simplistically split between $15 million in a 2021 base salary and then $15 million in signing bonus. And then you can tack on another a dummy year, as I mentioned, for 2022. You can tack on, you could potentially tack on more dummy years to that. But essentially, those dummy years are not meant with the idea that Julio Jones is going to play out those years. They're meant to basically just spread out any bonuses that you're going to give him on this contract. And in this example, I'm using $15 million. So you're basically giving him basically $30 million for one more year, and you're guaranteeing him, you know, $51 million in the next 3 years. But what's going to be interesting to me is because of the Antonio Brown deal where he only got $30 million guaranteed, in this scenario that I'm presenting to you, with the $21 million that he's owed over the next 2 years, you guarantee that in base salary. Then with the $15 million signing bonus that you give him as part of that, the $30 million that you're adding to that, that's $36 million that you could automatically is guaranteed. And so the question is, is that where the Falcons stop? Where they're like, oh, Antonio Brown only got $30 million guaranteed. 36 is plenty. Or do the Falcons, you know, then guarantee part or all of that 2021, that $15 million in base salary that Julio Jones is owed in this scenario, which would then push his guarantees to, you know, $51 million in total guarantees. And then you have this wide gap between 36 and 51. And is it 40? Is it 42? Is it 45? Is it 48? Is it 51? Et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's really where the negotiation is going to lie on this Julio Jones contract. Now, again, you know, Julio Jones and his representation could be like, nope, we want a brand new 5-year contract extension that averages out, you know, $19, $20 million a year. And we want, you know, 50, 60 million guaranteed on that deal. That could be a possibility. I don't think that is. Again, going back to what I said, where I think really Julio Jones is in the mindset of getting as much, you know, guaranteed money over the next couple of years rather than sort of resetting the wide receiver market. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But it'll be interesting to sort of see how it is. I think, again, the simple version that I've outlined, which is Julio Jones is basically just tack on another $30 million, with some or all of that being guaranteed on part of the $21 million that you're owed to Julio Jones. That's obviously a simplified version of that, of this negotiation. But I think it could be as simple as that. And so we'll have to see if that, you know, means that the timetable for this deal gets done sooner rather than later. And by sooner, I'm not talking about in the next week or so. I'm talking about probably after the draft, like in May and early June, which will then leave the Falcons plenty of time to then refocus on getting Grady Jarrett's deal done in late June and early July. So that's going to be the interesting thing about this situation. I'm very curious to see how the Falcons play out before anybody accuses me of, you know, trying to lowball Julio Jones. It's not, I think Julio Jones is owed as much money as he can get. So if he wants, you know, $80 million, $60 million, $100 million, whatever that number is, then, you know, I guess the Falcons got to pay him. But I'm just sitting here saying, like, I don't think it's going to come to that. I don't think this is as sort of the traditional negotiation that you would expect for a guy that's coming up on the end of his contract and is looking for a long-term extension, like we normally see with, you know, younger wide receivers, like we saw with Julio Jones, you know, what, 4 years ago now, and like we saw with Odell Beckham and whatnot. So, and even 2 years ago when Antonio Brown got his new deal, because I think he only had 1 year left on his contract at the time. So I think because Julio Jones is owed a lot of money over the next 2 years, we're not going to see that sort of traditional sense of a negotiation. But I could be wrong about that. So I do think this Antonio Brown deal sets some decent parameters. I wouldn't say firm, but fairly firm. I guess I will say firm. Firm parameters for what we kind of know what Julio Jones is now going to get over the next 3 years. The question to me is really how much the guaranteed money. And this to me has been the hang up on the Grady Jarrett contract. You know, my speculation as far as that is it's the guaranteed money. Is it 45? Is it 48 million guaranteed for Grady Jarrett, or is it 60 million guaranteed for Grady Jarrett? That to me is really been the question. And that's a pretty big gap, you know, as I've explained before with the Grady Jarrett situation, going from 45 to 65 million, it's $20 million of negotiation window. And with this Julio Jones situation, if it's like, say, 30 to 36 million to 50 plus, 50 to 55 million. Again, that's a pretty wide window of negotiation. So part of that is one of the reasons why I'm not necessarily optimistic that it's going to get done all that soon. But I do think it's at least a little bit more narrow of a window than necessarily the Grady Jarrett situation, because it's probably really 36 and 50 as opposed to what I just said about Grady Jarrett. I'm throwing so many numbers at you guys. I can't remember everything I just said. So we'll have to see how that plays out. And we'll have to see what the rest of this week brings. The tampering period started today. I think it's going to be relatively quiet 48 hours for the Falcons. We might hear about maybe one or two signings. You know, there's some heat for my man, J.R. Sweezy out there. Can't wait for the Falcons to spend a whole bunch of money on J.R. Sweezy. So I get to break down my beloved J.R. Sweezy to bolster the Falcons guard position. And we'll have to see what the Falcons do over these next couple of days. But I will definitely keep you locked here on the Locked On Falcons podcast. If you have any potential feedback for me, you can, of course, send it to me on Twitter or Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or the email address lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons. Your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.